Chapter 19 is Maso Mitzrayim. Chapter 20 is going to be a very brief, very short chapter. And that's going to describe some kind of a war that will take place at Ashdod. In 19 and 20, we're going to find that there's going to be some kind of a relationship between Mitzrayim to the south, Asher to the north, and Yisrael in the middle. Now, one of the difficulties of these two chapters is we're not certain about what period of time the Navi is talking about. So, we will demonstrate, I think, as we have done in the past, that the words of the Navi usually reflect something that happened or was going to happen near or relatively near to his period in history. But remember, if its only message was about something that happened and then passed from the world and it's all over, it would never have become part of the prophecies of Yeshayahu. Then it would have been limited. Which means that every prophecy has to be understood within the real context of when it took place, and that may not always be easy to determine. And then, of course, it's going to be important in terms of what will happen in the future, but that also we're not going to fully comprehend until the events happen. When the events happen, then this is what Yeshayahu was talking about. I'm going to run quickly to describe chapter 19 describes the collapse. The first half of the chapter describes the collapse of Mitzrayim. Egypt is simply going to collapse. There's going to be not so much the result of an enemy from without, but there is going to be an enemy from without. And this is all within the simple time frame is the time frame of the days of Yeshayahu, where Sanherib, king of Ashur, it becomes the ruling power in the world. He crushes Mitzrayim. But Mitzrayim is destroyed not only from without, but there's also an implosion from within. There's strife from within Mitzrayim that destroys it internally. Not only is there going to be war and strife and battles, but the economy of Mitzrayim is going to collapse, and the Navi is going to describe it in extremely poetic terms. But then something is going to happen. Halfway through the chapter, Mitzrayim is going to, of all the strange things, Mitzrayim is going to turn to the God of Israel. Now, this also has to be understood in two contexts. There are those of the Mefarshim who say that following the fall of Ashur at the gates of Yerushalayim, there was a wave of great awe, reverence, and respect for the God of Israel that swept over the ancient world. Because Sanherib, king of Ashur, had destroyed Mitzrayim once, possibly twice, or three times. He was the arch foe. He was the great enemy. And here it is, at the gates of Yerushalayim, he is crushed completely. And they understand, the word makes it through the world that this is a miraculous occurrence. And yes, that there was a military solution to the problem of Ashur. Certainly when you have Hashem Ish Milchama, God, the man of war who wages war. So that there's going to be a feeling of closeness to the God of Israel that will overcome Mitzrayim. And which means that at some point in history there's going to be a growing close between God and Mitzrayim. It may very well be understood in the context of something to happen in the future. The two powers that are discussed in these two chapters are Ashur to the north, Syria, and Mitzrayim to the south. And they're going to be a shlishiyah, the Navi is going to say. There's going to be a trio a trio, and there's going to be a traveling from Mitzrayim to Ashur via Eretz Yisrael, you know, the old railway that went from Cairo to Damascus, you know, going through Yehuda v'Shomron, which means that obviously at some point in history it will be so, because remember, we will quote some more of them, but in Aleinu L'Shabeach every day, the second half of Aleinu L'Shabeach is Al Kei Nikarvelu Hashem Elokeinu. We look forward when we hope. Al Kei Nikarvelu Hashem again. Lirot Meheda B'Tiferet Uzecha and Kol Yoshvei Tevel. In that second part of Aleinu, what's described is that the whole world is going to recognize the existence of God, which means that our neighbors to the north and our neighbors to the south are also going to see the God of Israel as the God, and therefore they are va'olu moshim b'har tzion, they're going to go to har tzion. All of the world is going to flow toward Yerushalayim. Masa Mitzrayim. I'm beginning at 19. Masa Mitzrayim. The vision, the prophecy that he carried about Mitzrayim. Hinei Hashem rokev al av kal uba Mitzrayim. God rides on a light cloud. The light cloud means that it's a swift cloud. Mitzrayim always took great pride in their swift horses. God doesn't ride on horses. His means of conveyance, the clouds, a swift cloud upon Mitzrayim, and he comes to Mitzrayim, the Noah Elilui Mitzrayim upon it, and the idols of Mitzrayim are going to tremble before him. Ulevav Mitzrayim, he must be kibbutz, the heart of Mitzrayim will melt from within, they will melt from fear. And then there's going to be the implosion, the problems from within, the Sichsachti Mitzrayim, Egyptian against Egyptian are going to be in conflict. The Nilchamu Ishbiachim, they will wage war, one with their brother, the Ishbereyehu, one with his friend, ear by ear, city against city, Mamlocha by Mamlocha, province against province, kingdom against kingdom. So first of all, there is the internal strife right there in Mitzrayim. And they're going to lose the ability to think clearly. The most important thing in a moment of crisis is to be able to think. But they're going to lose that too. V'nof k'ruach Mitzrayim v'kirbo. The spirit of Egypt is going to be emptied from within. No wisdom. V'atzato, his counsel, avaleya, I will destroy. And they're going to be so desperate for guidance and direction. And they don't have their wise men, because the wise men, Abnishkin Seichel, we know exactly what that can mean. Quite highly intelligent people can be very, very stupid. I don't have to say much more. Vidarshu, so they're going to seek knowledge. Elha Elilim, they're going to turn to the idols. Ve'elha Itim, to the dead. Ve'elha Ovot, ve'elha Yidonim. Itim, Ovot, and Yidonim are three different ways in which sorcerers of old received messages or seemed to be communicating with the dead. In other words, they're desperate. They're desperate. I don't know which American president it was that, you know, looked at the daily horoscope to figure out what to do. In other words, when you don't have a choice and you don't have the intelligence or the counsel, the advice, then you turn to all sorts of... I don't know if their whole culture, but they didn't worship the dead. But I would say, you see, the only thing is, I believe about all of these things that when a person's mind is working and he feels that he has the intelligence to resolve a problem, then he's going to do it that way. Lahavdil, when a person is absolutely desperate, they can't figure out what to do, they'll go to a Rav, they'll go to a Rebbe, they'll go to a social worker, a psychologist. When do you turn for help? You turn for help when you can't help yourself. A Mitzrayim that had wisdom and intelligence didn't turn to the Ovot and Yidonim. It's when they are bereft of all intelligence and into the, they've lost the ability to think clearly. And by the way, on a certain level, this people are struck with this time and time again. That's why we need friends to whom we can turn to for advice and counsel. When we're involved in a situation, there are times we simply don't see the truth staring us at us, we just can't see. And then you turn to somebody else. I have it often. People ask me something, and I tell them, do such and such. Rabbi, a blessing on your head. That's such good advice. And I'm thinking to myself, what are you talking about? That's what any intelligent person would have done. It's just that people can't think when they are caught in terrible crisis of their own. They're caught up emotionally. Here, Mitzrayim doesn't have the wisdom left, so then they're going to turn in all directions. And then next pasuk, v'sikarti et Mitzrayim b'yad Adonim Kosher, I'm going to give over Mitzrayim into the hand of a strong master, u'melech az, a mighty king, Yimshol, will rule over them. Nu'um ha'adon Hashem Tzarkot, says the master, the God of hosts. So look what's happened to Mitzrayim. There's an enemy from without. They are destroyed from within. They've lost the ability to think clearly, and therefore they melt away before the onslaught of the enemy. And now the next thing is, this is step one. Step two is the economy of Mitzrayim is going to suffer. V'nishtu mayim mehayam, the water is going to either be removed or it's going to dry out from the sea. V'nohar, the river, the Nile, yecherav, will dry, will be destroyed. V'yavesh, it will be dry. V'hez nichu naharot, the naharot are all the little channels, canals that come off the Nile. They are going to be desolate or abandoned. Dolalu. Low, the water goes low. V'chorvu yorei matzor. And the rivers of matzor. And here in the first one, I see say two pshat. The one is matzor, is a poetic term for Mitzrayim. Yorei matzor. The rivers of Mitzrayim are going to be dry. Or matzor means, as we talked last week, the moat that is there to prevent a siege. And then the vegetation, the plant life, is going to die. Kone basuf kamelu, the reeds and the suf are going to wither away. Orot al yor, al pi yor. And when that happens, if the water is going down and the vegetation along the Nile is dead, then what happens then? You see, the beach, the sand becomes revealed. Orot al pi yor. Orot, in a sense, comes from the word erva, a nakedness that is open, and there, by the mouth of the river, it's all naked. Now that you can see it, you go to the Kinneret now, you see, big shtiklach Kinneret. Orot al pi yor. Orot al yor al pi yor. V'chol mizvar yor, and then the next step is going to be that whatever grows, any seed that grows in the yor, yivash, will be dry, nidaf, blown away, ve'inenu, and it's not there. So now we're talking about that from which Mitzrayim lives economically. The yor is gone, and everything that grows around or in it is gone. So then obviously, what's the next step? The next step is, what's a major part of their economy? Fishing. Ve'onu ha'dayogim, the fishes are going to lament. Ve'ovlu, and they will be in mourning. Kol mashlichei b'yor chakor, whoever throws the hook, the one who throws the chakor into the river in order to catch fish. Uforsei michmoret al pnei mayim umlolu, those who spread out nets across the face of the water so that they should gather in fish that way, umlolu, they are unfortunate, they're destroyed. Uvoshu, if nothing is growing, then the whole economy of the linens of Egypt, it's all over. Uvoshu ovdei fishtim sirikot, those who work by the flax and the linen and comb it out will be shamed. For orgim chorai, and those who embroider or create the nets made with holes in them, so nothing left for them to do. V'hayu shototeha midukayim. Shototeha, the foundations of Mitzrayim are going to be crushed, destroyed. Kol osei secher, argmei nofesh. Those who made their living by making dams, damming the water of the Nile, are now full of desperation and desolation. Archavilim sorei tzoan, chachmei yoatzei faro. I think this is where we got to. Sorei tzoan was one of the cities of Mitzrayim, in which the seat of government, or one of the seats of government, the officers, the princes of Tzoan, have become foolish. They are evilim. An evil is a fool. Interesting, the Malbim in Mishlei says that an evil is a certain kind of fool. We're not talking just evil. Really has the word, has the words, the letters of the word that make up ulai, maybe. A person who cannot make a decision, it can drive him crazy and drive everybody around him crazy. He's always saying, maybe this, maybe that, maybe that. She loves me, she loves me not. You can't live with a person who's ulai. In other words, there's no decision. They've lost the ability to make decisions. Now, at times of crisis, you need decisive people. Ach evilim sorei tzoan, the princes of Tzoan are evilim. Chach me yoatzei paro, the wise counselors of Paro, eitzel, the advice that they give is nivora. Nivora means, it comes from the word ba'ar. A ba'ar is an ignoramus. The ignorant, silly things that they say. Eich tomru al Paro, and the Navi asks them, how can you say to Paro, ben chachamim ani, I am the son of the wise? Now, they had their intellectual elite that saw themselves as having been born from wise men, and they are wise men. Ben malchei kedem, I have yichus to understand, if bin aben achaben, from some malchei kedem, kings of the east, and therefore we have great wisdom. How can you say it? All wisdom is gone. Mitzrayim has lost its ability to think clearly. Ayom eifo chachamecha. Where indeed are your wise men? V'yagidu nalach. Let them tell you what to do. V'yedu. And they should know, Ma yo'atz Hashem tzvakot al Mitzrayim, what the God of hosts has counseled about Mitzrayim. Let's see if they know that. Because they don't know any way out of the situation in which Mitzrayim finds itself. So we're talking about Mitzrayim at a time of terrible, terrible confusion. Not knowing where to go or what to do. This has obviously happened to Mitzrayim many times in history. It's not a one-time affair, one such event. In the days when Assyria was the mighty force in the world, Mitzrayim was conquered three times. Conquered three times. Now, do you understand what a country goes through when they're conquered three times by the same power? In other words, it seems to be like they're conquered and they rebuild and they throw out the conqueror and he's back again. Syria kept sending its forces against Mitzrayim. Navalu sorei tzoan. We talked about the sorei tzoan before, the princes of Tzoan. Noalu. They have become foolish. Ah, where do we have the word Noalu? Yesterday, Parsha, end of Bahalotcha, Aaron says to Moshe, please forgive us. Asher no'alnu. We acted foolishly, we spoke foolishly. No'al sorei tzoan. The officers, the princes of Tzoan have become foolish. Nis'u sorei nof. Nish'u. No, it doesn't have any meaning any other way. Nish'u sorei nof. Nof, not Harno. Nof was a great city in Mitzrayim, Memphis. The Greeks called it Memphis. All right. Now the Nishu. the princes of Noph have been deceived, seduced. What did Chava say to God? God, why did you eat from the Eitz HaDaat? So she said, Hanochosh Hishiani. The snake convinced me, influenced me. Nishbu Sorei Nof. The Sorei Nof, in a sense, tried to influence the people of Mitzrayim. Hit'u et Mitzrayim pinat shvoteha. Hit'u comes from the word ta'ah, to wander. It was pinat shvoteha. In other words, the pillars of her tribes, the great people, are the ones who led them astray. Isn't that the way it always happens? The great people, the wise men, the political leaders, are the ones who simply cause them to stumble. Ah, but wait a minute. Is that really all that there is to say? Was it only the princes of Egypt who foolishly or advised foolishly? Is that it all? Now you should know that that foolishness has a source. Hashem Masach b'kirbar ruach ivim. God, Masach means has poured. He has poured a spirit of nonsense, or it's more than that. Ivim is a word that encompasses confusion, madness, destruction. Ruach ivim, that spirit of confusion, madness, and destruction, God is the one who poured that down into Egypt. V'hit'u'et Mitzrayim b'chol ma'aseihu, and therefore they caused Mitzrayim to err and to stumble and to wander in everything that they did. And what a beautiful description. Ki ta'ot shikor b'ki'o, as a drunk wanders through his own vomit. And he can't get out of it. The more, I mean, you get a little creepy thinking about it, but here it is. It's all the vomit is coming out, and there he's caught in the midst of it, he's getting filthier and filthier. He can't find his way out. They have become so confused, and their advisors are so confused. They can't find the way out of the mess they put themselves in. And where did that foolishness come from? It was God is the one who poured out the foolishness. Okay, I can see the looks on some of your faces. You expect me to take it one step further. I'm not.
Not there yet.
V'lo yiyeh l'mitzrayim ma'aseh. It's amazing. He says there will not be a positive act that Mitzrayim will be able to do. Asher ya'aseh rosh v'zonov kipa v'agmon. Rosh means one of their heads. Zonov means one of their smaller leaders. Nobody is going to be able to act. Nobody's going to be able to do anything to get them out of it. Kippah, or somebody who sort of has the responsibility to watch over Egypt. Agmon. Agmon is a sort of a lowly pakid. These are four different kinds of people who are in positions of either influence. Nobody will be able to do anything. There's nobody who's going to do a positive act. Bayom Ahu, now don't get upset with this puzzle. Bayom Ahu yiyeh Mitzrayim kanashim. On that day, Mitzrayim will be like women.
Keep going.
No, I'm not going to keep going. I mean, the Navi is making the statement. And I can see at least the Daf Nikra, in other words, what he writes over here, the Mosadar of Cook Parish, he writes something, of course, that most probably would not have appeared in Perushim of 100 or 500 or 1,000 years ago. But he says the following. First of all, he brings a number of other places where people are compared to women. So he says the following. First of all, it's all based on the fact that what we're talking about is that they are not going to be able to wage war like women. The comparison to women is that women don't wage war. This is the way it always was in the ancient world. And even when they're trying to do it, what is it that first Mrs. Pilot over there in America got thrown out of her position of pilot? They just traditionally and naturally, there were certain things that were not done by women. Waging war was one of them. So listen to the words of the Perusha. Ve'ein bazeh shum gnai l'nashim. This is not something that is being said as a negative thing for women. Ve'efshe shishadachu. It may very well be understood as a praise. She'ein hanashim oskot v'shvichud damim ka'anashim. Women are not involved in spilling blood like men are. This is the dirty business that men do. Women don't do it. The four mothers are the ones who look for peace, you understand? Nashim b'shachar, they're the ones that are going to bring... Alright. So therefore... And by the way, I believe that that's really what the Navi meant. It's not stretching it, huh? That's in the... Those are the next two words. The chorad...
That women would tend to be
right. I'm afraid you're right, but I'm trying to. Yeah, I'm trying to.
Not a negative.
All right, you know that's also not negative.
Women are often the victims.
That's why they don't make war.
And that's right.
Women are often the victims. Women are often.
The only thing is, I'm not so sure that women are more terrified and more frightened than men are. I don't know. I find.
Very often women are stronger.
Exactly what I was going to say. There are times that women are stronger.
But it also depends on the circumstances. Women are often victimized or the first to be slaughtered or raped or captured. Women have less power to defend themselves.
Less power to defend. Okay. All right. All right.
If you have a child with you, you don't have to hold a man free. Thank you.
You're right. Okay, so all of these things are correct. In other words, the Navi is not making a negative statement about women. Very good. Vulnerability is an excellent word. Okay. Good. We got through that sentence. Huh? It's probably the... Exactly. It's probably the real meaning. We are not distorting the words of the Navi. V'chorad u'fachad. He will tremble and be frightened from before the raised hand of the God of hosts. God is raising his hand above Egypt. The land of Yehuda is going to be for Mitzrayim Chaga. The word Chaga means something that causes trembling. In Tehillim, there is the pasuk that describes people who go down to the sea in ships, and they are caught in a storm. Yochogu v'yonu'u kashikor. They're going to move back and forth like one who is drunk. The word Chaga represents this movement. This movement, a back and forth movement. It may, I haven't seen this, but it may be related to the orbit of the world. As the world turns on its axis, that's Chog HaShamayim, a constant movement. So the word Chog, you know, I think they also have it, sometimes I've seen it, like planes, Chogu, planes, you know, things with motors that fly, were the point on a clock is a machog. That's right. It's also, there is constant movement. So he says that when one will mention Atmat Yehuda in Mitzrayim, you're going to talk about Judea, it will be a cause of trembling. Whoever is going to mention to somebody else, Atmat Yehuda, why? Because this passage must be talking already after the destruction of Sanhedrin at the gates of Yerushalayim. We have to imagine we have to imagine what, how that reflected, was reflected throughout the whole world. Now, we remember in our days following the Six-Day War. What are you talking about? Medinat Yisrael was the power and the might of the world. The arm that crushes its enemies. There was a great sense of respect, and amongst the enemies of Israel, fear and trembling. Here there's been a mighty power that has crushed country after country for years. Asher has trampled on its kind three times. And all of a sudden, overnight, the one night war, the one night war, and Ashur is crushed at the gates of Yerushalayim. Do you know what that meant in the world? A trembling, oh, nobody's going to start up with Yehuda. This is what he's referring to. That following that great victory, the angel of death comes down. So therefore, the term Admat Yehuda, because that's where Ashur was crushed upon the land of Yehuda. Mipnei Atzat Hashem Tzarkot, and it's all because of the counsel and the advice, the decision that was made by the God of hosts, Asher Hu Yo'etz Olav, that he advises about him, he advises about Israel, and he advises about Mitzrayim, and therefore whatever he advises about Mitzrayim is going to be. By Yom Ahu, from here on and further, the Navi is going to describe a spiritual reawakening that is going to descend upon Egypt. They're going to start becoming from. Now this, as we say, has to be understood in two ways. There were such periods in ancient Egyptian history. There were such things. And, you know, lasted for a while, petered out. But it's written in the prophecy here because ultimately, that's exactly what's going to happen. At the end of Zechariah says, any Egyptian who does not come to Yerushalayim to celebrate the Yom Tov of Sukkos will be punished. They're going to come here for Sukkos. Now, there will be a turning of the nations of the world to the God of Israel. That's what's going to happen. So it happened in a limited sense sometime in the days of Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu. And it may have happened at a number of other periods in history. And then it ultimately will happen in history as well. By Yom Ahu, on that day, you Chamesh Arim Beretz Mitzrayim, there will be five cities in the land of Egypt, Medabrot Svat Canaan, that are going to speak the language of Canaan. The language of Canaan, either it's how they call Hebrew, because it was the language that was spoken by the people who lived in the land of Canaan. There are also opinions that say that there was a language called Canaan which had many similarities to Hebrew. And in a sense, in their desire to identify with the people living in Canaan where the destruction of Asher took place, they're going to be speaking the language of Canaan. The Nishbaot, and they are going to swear. They're going to know exactly in whose name to take an oath. La Hashem Tzarkot, the God of hosts. Ir ha-heres ye-omer le-echad. One of those cities, they will say about it that it was a city of utter destruction. It was nearly utterly destroyed, and then it turned to God and was saved. By Yom Ahu, on that day, there's going to be an altar to God in the midst of the land of Egypt. And there's going to be a monument by the boundary of Mitzrayim and Eretz Yisrael that is going to be dedicated to the God of Israel. There's going to be a movement of coming closer to the God of Israel. There will be a sign and a testimony to the God of hosts by Eretz Mitzrayim in the land of Egypt. Because you know who they're going to cry out to at the time when they are in distress or oppressed? They're going to call out to God. God will send to Mitzrayim one who will bring them salvation. Vorov. Vorov does not mean a rabbi, but Vorov means somebody who is going to fight their battles in In Al Hanisa we say Harav es Ribeinu, the one who takes up our battle. Vehitzilam, and he's going to save them. Venoda Hashem in Mitzrayim, God will be known in Mitzrayim. Vyadu et Mitzrayim et Hashem Bayomahu, and Mitzrayim will know God on that day. They will get to know them. In a sense, what this also means is that when Moshe comes to Pharaoh and he tells him in the name of God, Vyadu, Mitzrayim will know Ki Ani Hashem, that I am God, it will not necessarily happen in the days of Moshe, but it is going to happen at the end of history. To know that Hashem. So I say, in a limited sense, yes, in the days of Yeshayahu and Chizkiyahu, yes, and then again it's going to happen, but when it happens again at the end of history, then it's going to be for all eternity. Yes, they find this is the finger of Etzba Elokim, and this is Elokim that at the Yamsuf they said this is the God who waged war in Egypt. And then of course there's the famous Medrash that says that Paro was the only one who survived, and he traveled the world telling them about the God of Israel. Yes. You're going to see something like that in just a few moments. If I get to a pasuk, you're going to see a pasuk that says what you're saying. Watch. Yes? It was here. Yes, we learned it. I believe it for homework. Huh? Yes. Yes, that's later. All right, I know what I'll have to do. Okay, I'll find it. Now watch. Va'ovdu zevach u'mincha, they're going to bring sacrifices and mincha. V'nodru nedel Hashem, they're going to make vows to God, v'shileinu, and they will pay. We're talking about, they're going to become frum. But now watch. Then it means that there's going to be a new relationship between Hashem and Mitzrayim, so therefore, when they will sin, v'nogav Hashem et Mitzrayim, God will bring punishment upon Mitzrayim, nagof v'rafo, he will bring plague upon them, and then heal them. V'shavu ad Hashem, mamish, do tshuva ad Hashem, v'ne'etar lehem, and he will accept their prayers, u'refo'am, and he will heal them. By the way, here is a fascinating Gemara. The Gemara says that as far as God's relationship with the Jewish people is, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makeh Es Yisrael, God does not smite the Jewish people, Ad Shebora Refuah. First, the Refuah is in place, and only after the Refuah comes the Makeh. And the Gemara learns that from the third Perek in Megillat Esther, Achar HaDvarim HaEle, after these things, Gidal HaMelech Achashverosh Es Haman Ben Hamdasa, Achashverosh raised Haman Ben Hamdasa. So Rava asks, after what things? After what? So the Rava says, Achashevara Refua Lamaka, after everything that would be necessary to save the Jewish people was already in place. Mordechai had saved Achashverosh from the assassination plot. It was written into the Book of Chronicles. Esther was already queen. So many things had happened. All the things had happened that were going to be the necessary ingredients for the salvation of the Jewish people. So first comes the preparation for Refu, and then comes the Makkah. But then the Gemara says, but not so with regard to the nations of the world. By the nations of the world, and they quote this pasuk, Nagof v'Rafo. By Klal Yisrael, it's Rafo first. The healing is there, and then Nagof. But by the nations of the world, it's Nagof v'Rafo. By Yom Ahu. Now, look at this pasuk, I tell you, this is a pasuk. If you want to hear what the new Middle East is, this is the pasuk. Bayom Ahu, on that day, Tiyem Mesila Mi Mitzrayim Ashura, there's going to be a road going from Mitzrayim to Ashur. Uba Ashur Be Mitzrayim, U Mitzrayim Be Ashur. Ashur is going to come to Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim is going to come to Ashur. For Ovdu Mitzrayim Et Ashur. Here the Mepharshim have a problem. It doesn't seem right that Mitzrayim should serve Ashur, so they learn v'avdu Mitzrayim et, the word et, and there's, I think once in this week's Sedra, im. That Mitzrayim, together with Ashur, are going to serve God. V'avdu Mitzrayim et Ashur, I mean, that's a new Middle East. That's going to be something. Bayomahu, and on that day, Yisrael Shalishia LeMitzrayim LeAshur. Yisrael is going to be the third, the holy trio. You understand? Huh? Dynamic duo. What did you say? Here are the three. I see why you came back. Okay. And it will be blessing in the land. You understand the blessing that comes with peace? And here they represent three powers. Now take a look what they represent. What they represent is three powers that despised one another, that waged war against one another. Mitzrayim against Ashur, Ashur against Mitzrayim, Ashur against Yisrael, Mitzrayim against Yisrael, the two of them against Yisrael, Yisrael against the two of them. And that will be Brocha B'Kerarot, Asher Berecho, Hashem Tzvokot Leimor. Here's also a passage that you have to listen to very carefully. That the God of hosts has blessed, saying, Baruch Ami Mitzrayim. Baruch Ami Mitzrayim. Let's just read the simple meaning of the passage. Baruch, blessed, if you translate it as it's written, it means Baruch Ami Mitzrayim, blessed is my people Egypt. Umaseh Yadai Ashur, and that which my hands made Ashur, the Nachalati, and my inheritance Yisrael. So now, Rashi says the following. Baruch Ami Mitzrayim. Rashi says, Baruch Ami Yisrael. Blessed is my people. Ami can only be Yisrael. What does the word Mitzrayim mean? The people who became my nation in Mitzrayim. Baruch Ami Yisrael, Asher Bacharti Li La'am. I chose them unto me as a nation, Behiyotam the Mitzrayim, when they were in Mitzrayim. Umaseh Yadai, when did I show my people the great handiwork of mine? When did I demonstrate it? With regard to Ashur, when I crushed Ashur at the gates of Yerushalayim. Had Eiti Lehem Bigvurot, Shehifleiti Ba'ashur. I showed them with the strength that of miracles against Ashur. Ba'yidei Otam Nisim, and those miracles of Mitzrayim and Ashur, then ultimately the Jewish people are going to return to me again and become Nachalati. Vehem Yehiyu Nachalati Yisrael. That's how the Targum Yonatan and Rashi explain the pasuk. Even though there are Mefarshim who indeed hold that, you know, yes, that yes, it's going to be a different Asher. It's going to be a different. Okay. Does it say when? I'm sorry, I'm taking the net. No, you know what I'm going to do here? Chapter 20. Now wait a minute. I handed out some sheets over there. So everybody has a sheet. Huh? Oh, no, it's on the next chapter. Okay. Let's go. Bishnat Bo, it's a small chapter. How many psukim do we have in chapter 20? Huh? No? Six. Six psukim. Bishnat bo Tarton Ashdoda. In the year that Tarton came to Ashdod. Tarton, we will see, is the commander-in-chief of the forces of Assyria. in the year that Tarton came to Ashdod, Bishloach Oto Sargon, Melech Ashur, when Sargon, the king of Ashur, sent him, Vayilachem ba'Ashdod vayilkidah, he waged war against Ashdod and he captured her. Who Sargon is? Well, we know that he's king of Ashur. According to the Gemara, Sargon was one of the names by which Sancheriv was known. He had 10 names. The historic background over here is the Ashdod was a Philistine city, very close to where our Ashdod is today. And they decided to rebel against Ashur. And who was going to be their ally in this battle? Mitzrayim was going to send reinforcements and troops and weapons to assist Ashdod in its struggle to free itself from the yoke of Ashur, because Ashur was the common enemy. Ba'etahi, Dibir Hashem b'yad Yeshayahu ben Amoz Leimor, at that time, God spoke through the hand, the vehicle of Yeshayahu ben Amoz, so saying, Leich upitachto hasak me'al motnecha, v'na'alcho tahalot me'al raglecha, v'yas kein, haloch arom v'yachef. He told him that he should take off the sackcloth that he was wearing. Lech upitachta. Remove the sackcloth, me'al matnecha, that is on your loins. V'na'alcho tachalotz me'al raglecho. Take the shoes off from your feet. V'yaskein, and he did so. Haloch arom v'yachef. And Yeshayahu walked around naked and barefoot. Mefarshim, of course, are going to say, as Targum Yonatan ben Uziel says, Orom is not to be understood absolutely and completely naked. That would be a terrible, terrible bizayon for the Navi. Orom, he translates as Pecheach. Pecheach means, and it's a word that's used in the Mishnah, torn garments. Torn. Zerissen and zerschlissen. In other words, he's walking around like a person who is going off into exile, who has suffered. Why? So the pasuk explains. Vayomer Hashem, kasher halach avdi Yeshayahu arom v'yachef, shalosh shanim, ot umofet, al Mitzrayim v'al Kush. As my servant, and here is one of the places where Yeshayahu is referred to as Avdi, as my servant Yeshayahu has gone around Arom naked and barefoot 3 years, he is a sign and a miracle to indicate what's going to happen to Mitzrayim and to Kush. Kush is Ethiopia, which is the Sudan south of Mitzrayim. Kush and Mitzrayim joined Ashdod in the battle against Ashur. This is a real battle, and we know when it took place. Now, the Mefarshim here also say it doesn't mean that Yeshayahu walked around 3 years naked and barefoot. During the period of 3 years, he would from time to time go out and say this prophecy. And in order that the prophecy should impact on the people, he would stand there barefoot and dressed in torn garments in order that they should see before themselves what is going to happen. Yes?
You said that he was in mourning for the exile of the tribes of the northern kingdom.
You know what he's saying that about? That's why he wore the sackcloth. And now he was in mourning because the 10 tribes have been taken off into exile. Now God tells him, remove the sackcloth. I want you to go around now dressed in torn, or a person being taken off in chains to exile, because he is going to present himself as Mitzrayim and Kush that are going to be taken off into exile. Kein Yinhag, that's why the next pasuk says, Kein Yinhag Melech Ashur et Shvi Mitzrayim. This is how the king of Ashur is going to lead off the captivity of Egypt, the Edgolut Kush, and the exile of Cush. Now it's interesting that he uses the word Shvi and Galut. The difference between Shvi and Galut, Shvi means a soldier who is a prisoner of war. Galut refers to the general population that is being taken from their country elsewhere. In Mitzrayim, he's going to take off, he's going to walk off with the captivity of Mitzrayim, and in Cush, he's going to send them off into exile. No Arim u'Zakenim, the young and the old, Arom v'Yachef. They're going to go out naked or in tattered garments, and Yachef, barefoot. V'chasufei sheit ervat Mitzrayim. Chasufei sheit, chasufei means revealed. The back part of their body, and in some cases the front of their body, they're going to be so tattered, it's all going to be revealed. In a sense, what it demonstrates is that the nakedness of Egypt and Cush, their emptiness is going to be revealed to the whole world. And Nebuch, he uses terminology, unfortunately, I'm afraid to say that this terminology, the only thing that sticks in our minds is Nebuch, Jews that were taken to their deaths during the Second World War. That's where we can see such pictures in our mind. Which one?
The nakedness of the backbone. That it comes to a
payment
for its
father. Aha, yeah, right. Rashi says, Cush and Mitzrayim were from Chum. Chum, Shem, Chum, and Yafet, they were the three sons of Noach. Who is the one that taunted or made fun of his father's nakedness when his father is rolling around drunk in the tent? It's Chum. He comes out, Paz, rolling around over there, naked and drunk. So their punishment is going to be that naked they're going to be taken off into exile. Yeah, Rashi brings that. Very good. V'chatu v'avoshu, and they will be broken and embarrassed. Who will be broken and embarrassed? Other nations of the world. And it may very well be referring to the Jewish people. You know why? Because then we're going to turn around and we're going to take a look, and we depended on Mitzrayim and we trusted Mitzrayim. Chapters 30 and 31 in Yeshayahu is going to tell them, don't trust Mitzrayim. Don't go down to Mitzrayim for aid and assistance. Don't get involved with them. Stay away from them. You can't trust them. They're going to stab you in the back. Yeah, 30 and 31, two amazing chapters. Huh? No, that was earlier. That was the broken reed for Aram and Ephraim. Ritzin Melech Aram and Pekach.
Yeah,
they're the Shnei, no, they are the Shnei Zanvos Ha'udim Ha'ashenim. They're the smoky. Yeah, Mitzrayim is the Koner Rotzutz, the broken reed, that if you take hold of it, it goes into your, you try and lean on it, and it goes straight through your head. Can't depend on Mitzrayim. Can't trust them. So therefore, V'chatu V'voshu, and they will be broken and shamed. Who? The people who are watching this, Mikush, Mabatam, those who look toward Cush for assistance, Umin Mitzrayim Tifartam, and those who thought that their glory is going to come, Mitzrayim is going to come to our aid and assistance. And take a look what's happened to them. For Amar Yoshev Ho'i Hazeh Bayomahu, those who live on this E. Now, In modern Hebrew, an E is an island, that which is surrounded on all sides by water. In Tanakh, an E does not have to be surrounded on all sides by water. If it has one border that's on the water, it borders on the water, it can also be called an E. Yeshayahu is now referring to Eretz Yisrael. Yoshev Ho'i Hazeh, remember he says Hazeh, he's saying Nevu and Eretz Yisrael, those who live here. You know what they're going to say by Yom Ahu? You know what Jews are going to say by Yom Ahu? Hine ko mabatenu. Take a look. This is what we... this is what happened to mabatenu, the ones whom we look to for aid and assistance. This is what happened. Ashenasnu sham liezra. We ran. We fled to Mitzrayim. That he should help us. Fled, run to Mitzrayim. Life to Mubarak every day. Life to Mubarak. I won't set foot in this country. There's no ambassador here, but they run to Mubarak. Lihi notzeh l'bnei melech Asher. To go be saved from before Asher. Ve'ichni malei tanachnu. And now they say, if the one whom we ran to assist us and to help us, take a look at what happened to him, he's been taken off into exile. How is he can't save himself? How is he going to save us? And then we're going to turn around and take a look and say we were so foolish. By the way, this is not the only place, but there are many places where Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu take a political position. And they made it very clear that they were opposed. They were opposed to any alliances, any and all alliances that were made by the kings of Yehuda. They were opposed to them. Yeshayahu was opposed to Chizkiyahu's making any kind of an agreement with Mitzrayim. They said that they will never come to our aid and our assistance. We can never depend on them. We can't trust them. Now, there are two things I have over here on this sheet. We'll take the bottom one first, because the bottom one is really a problem. Bela, Toby Willig is getting me nervous out there. Come, ask her, invite her in, tell her to sit down. Come, Toby, come in. She can't see. Yeah, come on. Toby, I don't want you standing out there. Come on in. The question is the following. And this I mention now because it is something that affects dozens of prophecies throughout, if not more than scores of prophecies. The Rambam in the Mor HaNevuchim, I'm reading the bottom paragraph. The Rambam, the Mor HaNevuchim, Chelek Sheni, Perek Mem Vav. The Mor HaNevuchim, the Guide to the Perplexed of the Rambam, is divided into three major sections. And each section has sub-chapters. The Rambam says the following. Cholilol Hashem mites nevi of domim l'shotim u'l'shikorim. God forbid that God should make his prophets like fools and drunks. You think Yeshayahu was walking around Orom v'yocheif? He's walking around naked and barefoot. V'yitzavim la'asot ma'aseh ha'shotim. V'yitzavim la'asot ma'aseh ha'shikoyim. You think God is going to command his prophets to do things that are done by fools or things that are ma'aseh shiga'on mishigas? V'on lam ho'yazeh kulo v'mara ha'nevuah. Says whenever you come to something of this sort, you should know it's not something that happened in the real world, in real life. This is the vision that the Navi sees in his mind. This is all in a vision, a prophetic vision. And he talks specifically about this chapter. As my servant Yeshayahu has walked around naked and barefoot, this is what's going to happen to Mitzrayim and to Cush. The pasuk says he walked around naked and barefoot. So the rabbi says it cannot mean that in reality it was so, but that everything that we've learned in this chapter is something that Yeshayahu sees in his mind, his prophetic mind's eye. Onam zehoyo b'marot elikim, v'onam yachshivu chalushei hasforah zeh kulo heyot hanavi misaper. The Rambam uses a very strong term. He says people who are chalushei hasvara, very weak in intellect, they're the only ones that can think that Yeshayahu really walked around Aron V'Achev. So of course it means that there's a long, illustrious line of Chalushei HaSvara, nearly all of the Mepharshim who disagree with the Rambam. Now, by the way, this is also true, for example, it's at the beginning of Parshat Vayera. At the beginning of Parshat Vayera, we're told three dusty Arab travelers are standing outside the tent of Avraham. Avraham goes running on a hot day, he brings them in, and he hurries, he bakes, he cooks, Sarah works, he makes a meal for them. The Rambam says, it never happened. It was all a vision that Avraham had. The Rambam goes to work on the Rambam. Frag nicht, what goes on? But it's with regard to this chapter as well. The Mepharshim hold that the purpose of all of this is to have a shocking effect on people. If Yeshayahu is walking the streets of Yerushalayim and he's in torn and tattered clothing and he's walking barefoot and he's telling them that Mitzrayim and Cush, this is the way they're going to be taken off into captivity. And the people, the countries, the nations, the mighty powers that you are turning to for aid and assistance and you're entering into agreements with them are not going to be able to save themselves. What are you doing? The whole point of this was to impact on the people. The whole point over here was that the Navi seems to be walking as living evidence of what's going to be. Can you imagine a God will be Yisrael? And we're not talking about, remember, we said it doesn't mean Mamish Arom. He's not completely naked. He's in torn and tattered clothing. And he's walking around barefoot in the midst of Yerushalayim. You think that that's not going to have an awesome impact on people? That was the point of it all. So therefore the Mepharshim disagree with the Rambam. Who cares about what a vision that Yeshayahu had in his mind? What kind of impact is that going to have on anybody? Watch. V'ha'adkan l'shon Rambam. V'ha'olam hidivrei Rambam. Shebemakom sha'katuv misaper sha'novi ose masa ha'nechsha v'ene abir l'masa shogim ha'mishugoyim. Yesh lo'hotzi et ha'katuv mipshutov ulomar shelo osa ha'novi et ha'maisa b'to ha'mamish. Wherever the Navi is told to do by God something that seems to be silly, stupid, ugly, then the Rambam says it always means that it was in a prophetic vision. For example, in the beginning of Sefer Hosea, God tells Hosea to go marry a prostitute and have children. And we're told he goes. He marries Gomer Bastivlayim. And he has three children, Lo Ami, Ben Ami, Balin, and I don't know, three kids they have. Okay. The Rambam says that all of those chapters in Hosea never really happened. In fact, you think that the Rebbein Shem sent a Navi to go ahead and marry a woman of ill repute? But all in the Farshim disagree with the Rambam. They say, yes, indeed. And the Gemara explains why. Because when God complained to Hosea about the Jewish people, you know what Hosea's response was? Hachlifein bu'uma acheret. Trade them in for another people. You don't like them, so you don't trade them in, you know? You get a new model. Give them that, dump the Jews, don't know, take the Egyptians, take the Palestinians, you know, do whatever you want. So God got angry with him. This is what a Navi says, Hachlifein bu'uma acheret, what are you talking about? So he tells him, I want you to see, you're going to marry a woman who's unfaithful, and let's see what kind of a relationship you're going to have. You may very well be deeply in love with her, and you're going to forgive her for her discretions, or indiscretions. Indiscretions, yes. Yes. By the way, if not for the fact that Gandhi was an anti-Semite, I agree with you 100%. He turned into an oath and a mofate for hundreds of millions of people. Precisely that. By who doesn't recognize the barefoot fellow wearing that white? You're absolutely right. Huh? And they listened to him. He threw out the British. Here we needed Begin, and there it was Gandhi. You're absolutely right. And therefore the Mepharshim take the position that yes, Yeshayahu walked the streets of Yerushalayim in a way that shocked people into a recognition that what they're doing is absolutely mad. By the way, isn't that what everybody thought? If there's going to be a demonstration today and 100,000 people are going to come out, it's the attempt is to shock. No? Send a message. The Navi has to send a message. The Navi cannot send a message by virtue of visions that he has in his dream or in his sleep. To be continued. So that's why this pasuk of Aron v'Yachev really impacts on many places in Tanakh. To be continued.